Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Sentimental garbage. Shamelessly commercial.
Hello. Eagle-eyed listeners might have noticed that you're getting an extra episode of Sentimental Garbage this week. Well, let me tell you why. Amazon Prime Video have just released a new show. You've probably heard of it. It's called Nine Perfect Strangers. It's based on the book by Liane Moriarty, the same author who wrote Big Little Lies. But this is more of a psychological thriller, and it's set in a wellness center. It's very, very exciting. It's got a huge cast, including Nicole Kidman, Melissa McCarthy, Regina Hall. But it also features the many talents of our guest today, Zoe Tarakis. Now, Zoe is an actor who's done a load of indie movies. They've been a star on Wentworth for years, but Nine Perfect Strangers is their first debut on an international stage in a huge production. They're playing Glory, one of Nicole Kidman's shady underlings. And Zoe is just like, I didn't know Zoe before this podcast, but afterwards I'm just so in love. They are so brilliant, they're so fun, just, this sounds very old, just talking to them makes me feel younger and cooler. But it's just also just really exciting to meet someone and be like, oh my god, you're going to be huge. You're going to be a huge, huge star, and I'm going to have been that nobody podcaster who spoke to you. Like, and honestly, it couldn't happen to a nicer person. I'm so pleased and proud to have Zoe on the podcast today, talking about Mamma Mia, which is just such a fun and slightly mental chat, really. We really get into odd nooks and crannies of that film. But stay tuned until the end, where we talk a little bit more about their role in Nine Perfect Strangers, which is available on Amazon Prime Video now. Hello and welcome to Sentimental Garbage, a podcast where we talk about the culture we love that society sometimes makes us feel a little ashamed of. My name is Caroline, and I can still recall our last summer. And don't go wasting your emotions, because joining me today is actor and super trooper Zoe Tarakis.
Hello. Hi, Caroline. It's Duncan.
Hi, Zoe.
I'm so stoked to be here. I can't get over it.
Oh my god. The thing is, when I haven't met a guest before, it generally goes one of two ways. First of way is that they don't understand what I'm asking of them, and they'll like suggest something that already has a huge critical following. Like, I had someone suggest The Secret Garden once. I was like, you've misunderstood. And or they get it straight away, and you were just like in a shot, Mamma Mia. I was like, of course, perfect.
Obviously. I mean, it was like I was tossing up between that and The Notebook, but I fear I don't want to cry this publicly, so I did go with Mamma Mia. I also feel more strongly about it.
I'm really glad that you chose Mamma Mia over The Notebook, because I have literally no personal connection to The Notebook whatsoever. Never seen it, don't care. But Mamma Mia, so many strong, visceral, emotional feelings. Please tell me your strong emotional feelings first.
Listen, I think I saw it with my mum in the cinema when I was like, when did it come out?
2008.
Cool. I was 8, right?
No.
And I saw it with my mum, and I remember her tears when Meryl Streep does The Winner Takes It All. Like, I remember looking at her and she was like uncontrollably sobbing. And I didn't get it at the time. You know, when you're 8, you're like, why the fuck is my mum crying at Meryl Streep on a hill? Watching it as an adult, Jesus fuck, that shit is moving. I also think to have like 3 older women be sexy, joyous, celebrated, intelligent, nuanced. Like, I don't really give a fuck about the younger characters, to be honest. And I give a fuck about the men. I do not give a fuck about the men in comparison to those 3 women.
Yes, there's definitely hierarchies of me caring about people in this movie. And at the very top is Meryl Streep and her best friends. The very bottom is Dominic Cooper.
Yes, he's so hot. You know, I saw him one time and I was like, maybe I'm not gay. Like, he's so hot. I still don't give a shit about him in the movie.
I know. That's how, yeah, that's how well everybody else is performing.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, he just, yeah, he looks like the hottest little frog. You know, he's got that little handsome face that's like, his eyes almost look like they're on the side of his head.
So far apart, but in a really sexy way.
Yeah, very hot little frog.
Yeah, there's like a universe between those two eyes.
Yeah.
And I'll get lost in it, gladly.
Yes, and yet, who cares? I had the exact same situation as you, except I was a bit older, in that I am... Remember, I was at uni and I took off the day for some reason, and then my mom just ended up day drinking, and lovely. And then we were just like, you know, what's this movie, Mamma Mia, everyone's talking about? And then just looking up you know, when it was on, I was like, fuck it, it's on in 15 minutes, we can get there.
Fuck it. Also, like, anything for Meryl, you know what I mean? I feel like most mothers over 40 would, like... drop anything for Meryl Streep. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like every woman, every mother has a weird gay bone for Meryl.
Yes. Yes, there is something just so, especially in this film. Like, obviously, Meryl is the greatest actor in the world. And that's like, by every empirical standard that we have for measuring that, she has it. Like, box office, awards, like, there's very few things in this world that we can unequivocally unquestion. And Meryl being the greatest is one of them.
That's very well said.
She's just, in this film, she's just a mom. There's something so mum about her in a
Isn't
way
it?
That's so, you know, like, mum and mom is used as such a deriding term, you know, mom jeans or mom whatever. Like, but there's so many, the essence of what it is to be someone's mum is in there, in those dungarees, in that little glue gun, in that drill.
Yeah, with the band-aid. Like, there's something so universally heartbreaking about her performance. As a mom in that. Do you know what I mean? I feel like everyone can watch that and feel the heartbreak that it is to have a brilliant mom. Like, I remember my mom always says this thing about, she calls it the poison chalice of having a good mom, which is that you have the greatest mom for the time she's alive, and then you spend the rest of your life paying for having such a good mom with the pain of losing her. And I feel like that's what that movie is, you know?
Oh my God.
I know. Ouch, right? Yeah.
That's very big.
Yeah. So, yeah. I was like, my Jesus, fuck.
Jesus.
I have to sit with this now. Good Lord. No,
you have to. And so is it like something that you and your mom come back to a lot together?
Oh, man. Like, if we're in the car and there's a 70% chance slipping through my fingers, we'll be playing.
Yeah.
And like, it makes us both cry like a bitch every time.
It's too much. It's too, like... I've got a scene by scene breakdown of it I think we should get to it like chronologically, because that's near the end of the movie when like the professionalism of this podcast will be established and I can just cry. But first I'm going to do a little plot summary, a broadly unnecessary plot summary. I've kept it as short as possible because we all know what it's about, but just in case there aren't. Sophie is a young woman living on a Greek island with her mother, Donna. After reading her mother's diary, she decides to invite three men who might be her father to her wedding without telling Donna. And then I've just written, hijinks ensue. Because that's what happens.
Absolutely.
And I think even like super fans of this movie, and to be honest, before you brought it to me a few days ago, I forgot how much this film meant to me. I sort of buried it in my head. I think because it had become such a cultural joke so quickly that it was just more convenient to bury it. But now that I've like rewatched and been like, no, you really did love this. You really have seen this 8 times, twice with your mom. I think even me, as an appreciator of this movie, will maintain it doesn't really begin until Julie Walters and Christine Baranski show up.
Fucking oath. Like, they could start there. It's nice that they don't. Do you know what I mean? So you have something to wait for, something to look forward to, but they absolutely could start there.
It's so strange that we begin with Sophie and her two bridesmaids, and then we never see those characters again.
I know. Like, I haven't rewatched the movie. I'm going off my sure knowledge of it. I feel very confident about my knowledge of this film. But for the life of me, I cannot remember what the two best friends look like. Sophie's two best friends look like.
Like, they look like Getty Images stock models. They don't look like actors.
they look like Getty Images.
Like people who need to, like, do a thing of surprise or of happiness for a still image and not for a moving picture.
Like the people who model costumes on the, like, costume box packet. You know what I mean?
Yes, yes, yes. And, I remember, because I was older when I saw this, I was 18, sitting down in my seat and them being on screen and me being like, oh no, we've made a mistake. And like, just it's a lot of like them screaming. It's a lot of like, you know, oh, reading from the diary. And then dot, dot, dot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh no. Yeah. But I do think, God love Amanda Seyfried. Like, she's so wide-eyed, and basically her job in most of the film is explaining plot in an increasingly upset way, with bigger and bigger eyes filling with more and more tears. And God love her, she does it. She really does it.
Does she ever, man? And, like, listen, I feel very... Something about her singing voice speaks to, like, a very deep part of me. I just don't know how somebody's singing voice is so clean and so clear.
Amanda Seyfried's singing voice, it does feel like the closest thing we have on earth to the Little Mermaid's real voice. Do you know what I mean?
Well said. It's like an angel. I feel, weird comparison, Amanda Bynes in Hairspray has a similar thing. It's so clean, it's crystal clear, and it's very pure, her voice, which I know the irony of Amanda Bynes now, but there's a purity in both of their voices that does something to me.
Yeah, oh my God. I mean, petition to get you back on for Hairspray, one of my favourite movie musicals ever.
Please.
Link, your pork is ready.
The arm, do the arning.
Arning, my arning.
My arn.
So good. Okay, back to the film we're actually speaking about. We both watched, or you sent to me, a video essay about this that you said would make me cry, and it did, by Lena Norms. And I think we're going to probably reference a lot of the ideas she came up with because they're just very good ideas. But there's this thing that she says about, you know, Walter's and Meryl Streep and Christian Baranski's characters, which is all of them are archetypes of what failed femininity is supposed to look like. So it's like the three-time divorcee, the single mother, the spinster. They're all these things that women are supposed to fear ending up like when they are in middle age. And they're the heart of the film. They're so funny. It's all about like their pleasure and their desires, and like they fix problems. And it's just, I find it so pure and beautiful.
Not only does it validate them and say, it's okay to be a spinster, it's okay to be this, they're celebrated for it. Like, that's what you love them for, is their brokenness, you know, per se, their brokenness in the eyes of the world.
Yeah. And like, it also makes me think that, I think there's this narrative around this movie of people who hate it, and there are plenty of people who do, of like, oh, what were they doing? What was Meryl Streep thinking, kind of thing? And all these other actors. But then I was just looking at them and I was like, these are three like master craftspeople of what they do. If you think about like, you know, what, like Julie Walters, this like helped redefine British comedy. Meryl Streep is like one of the great, great dramatic actresses. Christine Baranski is this great musical theater actress. The thing is, they're such titans of what they do, but because of the way the movie industry is structured, they would never get to work together otherwise. Like, what's a movie where they can be together and be like in the same, not just together, but like in the same scenes.
And in the same world, because they do, you're right, they are kind of female actors or actresses who represent their own kind of very separate worlds. Like Meryl Streep would be taken more seriously, per se. And to have a world where they can inhabit the same space, but also not be pitted up against each other, is like fucking delightful and too fucking rare.
So, so rare. I feel like any other movie that would have the three of them in it, they would be like competing wives of some guys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And also to have I can't remember if that video essay mentioned this, but like to have a film where the main love story is one of female friendship. Mm. Like, you don't really give a shit whether Meryl Streep ends up with Pierce Brosnan or whoever. You don't really give a shit about Sophie and her fella. Like, the main love story is these three women and their undying friendship. And also then the love story of a mother and a daughter. Yeah. You know, like, and when the fuck does that happen?
Yeah, especially for like, I feel like there are female friendship movies, but they're all for extremely young women, right? And there's like, obviously I love those movies and they're great, but there's very little out there about like women who have been through their entire lives together and who have watched each other and who don't necessarily see each other every day because that kind of belongs to a younger woman. Like, but it's clear they don't see each other all the time, but like they've seen each other at every phase of development and they've loved everyone.
Yeah. And they pick up where they left off as well.
Yeah. And I just find them so funny. Like, I really think the moment where the music starts working is Money, 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 because it's when the film unhinges itself from reality.
Yes, yes. And it's like, and camp. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Because up till then, it feels like a very classic movie musical, like Amanda Seyfried running around being like, honey, honey, how he thrills me.
Okay, boys.
Okay, boys.
Right. More, please. I want you to preview every song now. Thank you.
Oh, don't make me sing.
They're making me sing.
How are they making me sing?
Don't make me, they're making me dance. the reference.
There's such a huge percentage of listeners who don't know what's happening right now, but those who do, I appreciate more.
I know. Kristen Wiig, we see you.
But when Money, Money happens, it's like, oh yeah, okay, Meryl Streep is broke and she wants money. I understand how they retrofitted this ABBA song into this plot. But then suddenly she's on a boat. She's on a boat with a scarf that's like 60 feet long behind her. And Christine Baranski and Julie Walters are on two jet skis that are stationary on the boat and not in the water.
Oh, it's so absurd. It's so absurd. Oh, man. I forgot about that bit. It makes me so happy.
It makes me so happy. And, like, you obviously have been on movie sets and TV sets and things. So you'll probably look at scenes like that. I imagine you do as an actor. You'll look at scenes like that and be like, something went wrong on that day. Because it's like, surely they were supposed to be on the jet skis in the water. But, like, obviously something happened with the handler or something.
The jet ski broke. And dare I say, it's a better choice.
And like you have all the like they. I mean, there's literally a Greek chorus in this movie where all the Greek actors, which I'm sure Greek people don't feel great about the fact that they have in this quote unquote Greek film. There are no Greek speaking roles.
I'm Greek and I give it the go ahead. You know what I mean? So on behalf of Greek people, I will confidently say, I ship this movie.
Oh, I'm so glad. I was really hoping we could avoid the sort of problematic corner, but we can just sort of like sail past it.
I'll be a Greek point of reference. I'm sorry to any Greek people that I'm speaking for. I speak for myself only, not for the whole country.
Yeah, and then like money, money, money. And then it's just like Meryl Streep on a casino, and just the way she's lit, it's so mad.
It's so camp.
She defends her choice to be doing this movie so much, and she's like, oh, you know, after 9/11, I went to see Mamma Mia in New York, and it helped, like, lift my spirits and all this. And like, I get that, but I have to think that that day on set, she was like, what am I doing?
It's so fucking good. It's so fucking good. Did you hear that thing? My best friend Gemma was telling me that apparently Colin Firth did an interview with Stephen Fry, and Stephen Fry says, what's one thing you wish God would say to you when you get to the pearly gates? And apparently Colin Firth's answer is, I actually thought you were quite good in Mamma Mia.
Aww.
Fucking oath. He is quite good in Mamma Mia.
He is quite good. And I feel like Colin Firth did not get that much pushback. I feel like the person who got all the pushback for this movie was, for some reason, Pierce Brosnan.
I know. I had this fight with my friends the other day. They were like, God, he was awful. And I was like, how very dare you?
How very dare... When people say that about my Pierce Brosnan, all I think is like, oh... You are a person, and this is mean, you are a person who just imbibes every cultural narrative that's being fed to you without interrogating it at all. Because, first of all, I think that the culture softly bullies Pierce Brosnan for reasons I don't totally understand. I think he's like, he was Bond at a time when Bond... wasn't very cool. It was like at that sort of nexus point where it hadn't reached that Daniel Craig slickness, but it also wasn't as kitsch as the 60s one. It was sort of tonally in a strange place, and they weren't very good movies. He was also a Mrs. Doubtfire. He's in, like, you know, kids movies, kind of family movies, and he's also like, he's so beautiful, it's absurd. Like, he's like a Ken doll.
It's absurd. Yeah. But he's a Ken doll in a really rugged way. Like, listen, I don't want to fuck men. Mm-hmm. But if I were to know a man in the biblical sense, like, Pierce Brosnan is up there. And people who say they don't like him, I'm like, have you no sex drive?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, there's something primally hot about him.
It's so primal, yet simultaneously so pretty and gentle. Like, I feel very safe when he's on screen.
Yes. Gentle is the word. He's like, I guess you could say, Caroline, he is the OG soft boy.
He's the OG soft boy. I really hope no one comes in my mentions with a huge problematic story about Pierce Brosnan, because if you have one, please, I beg of you, do not give it to me.
I don't want to know.
Okay, so there's three men in this movie. There's Skarsgård. There's Colin Firth, and there's Dominic Cooper, who the world forgets. And I feel like Colin Firth and Skarsgård, they have, like, because they've been more active the last sort of 10, 15 years, people feel like they aren't as ready to make fun of them for some reason. But because Pierce Brosnan's career has been relatively quiet, I feel like people really went after him. And here's what else I'm going to say. I really love his vocal deliveries.
I couldn't agree. You took the words out of my mouth. I was about to say, SOS is one of my favourite songs in Mamma Mia. Not for the song, but for his singing. I think there's a real, like, kind of sexy husky thing happening.
I agree. I remember watching an interview back when this was being promoted, and someone tried to, like, get Meryl Streep to admit that Pierce Brosnan's voice was bad. They were, like, softly bullying her into, like, throwing her new friend Pierce under the bus. It was very much like when the cool girl is friends with an old loser, and they're like, come on, we know you don't like him, really. And Meryl was like, no. And I remember she said very firmly, she was like, Pierce Brosnan sounds like Tom Waits. And I was like, yes!
Sure. I want him to cover Martha, please.
Yes!
And thank you. Also, his chemistry with Meryl Streep, fuck me up. Like, they have popping chemistry. They also duet together like nothing else.
Like, the way she looks at him, I just don't believe they haven't banged.
I know. It begs the question, doesn't it?
It begs the question. Like, it just, there's so much And I know it's Meryl Streep, and I know she's famously quite good at what she does. But like she just her eyes just fill with this such recognizable love. She looks like someone, like she looks like those viral videos of a dog when their owner is a soldier and comes back from service. Like that's what she looks like when she looks at
literally. There's also something like really horny about their connection. Like it feels like her body lights up when they're together as well. You know what I mean? And she gets like, you know that like beautiful thing that happens when you're in a relationship with somebody where you kind of both turn into kids a bit?
Yeah.
And like you get really like teenagery or like primary school. They get real primary school around each other.
But back to the absolute camp factor. I love when, you know, Sophie spends the day on the boat with the three lads. And
Our last summer.
And which is great. Love the whole bit. And I was watching it with my best mate Ella yesterday. And she was like, what's nice about this bit is that in any other movie, these would be Amanda Seyfried's love interests.
So true.
And instead it's just like, who will be my lovely daddy?
Can we just talk about how the moment where they all are being the younger version of themselves and it's they go to no effort. Like it's none. Literally just them in wigs. None at all.
No, yeah.
I'm like, hair and makeup department. Yeah. Where were you? But also, thank you.
I wanted to bring this up, actually. There's a strange bending of space and time happening in the Mamma Mia cinematic universe. Because first of all, it maintains, which I like, it maintains that Meryl Streep is 40. Because it says that she had, like, she got pregnant with Sophie when she was 20. And Sophie is now 20. And Meryl was a clean 60.
Is Sophie meant to be 20 in that?
She what?
Is Sophie meant to be 20?
Yeah. Why, how old did you think she was?
Listen, I think because I watched it when I was really young, she looked like 30 to me.
Oh, that makes sense.
You know, when you're a kid and everyone just looks ancient because you're a kid?
Yeah.
And now that I'm 21, the maths, it adds up, you know, that she would be 20, but I'm just playing mental catch up.
Are you having your first existential aging crisis of your life right now? Am I present for that? Of like, oh no, I'm older than Sophie.
You may have nudged something along, Caroline.
Oh no. And in your profession, there's already so much pressure on staying young and I've already sped it up.
Yeah, it's okay. Next time I come on this, I've got full face of Botox.
Just utterly frozen talking about hairspray. Not emoting. So it bends space and time because first of all, Meryl Streep is supposed to be 40. And as we've said, she's a clean 60. And second of all, in this movie, the 70s were 20 years ago. Because when they're all young, they're all either hippies or they're punks or whatever. And it's like, no, the 70s were longer.
Yeah, flower power.
Yeah, it was the time of the flower power.
Of the flower power. That's so true. I mean, its timescape is kind of...
It's strange.
It's camp.
It's camp. My sister says this to me all the time. You're like, you can't just defend bad things by saying they're camp. And I'm like, can't I?
Absolutely can.
And... All right, what happened after that? Oh, do you know what we skipped over, but I absolutely love so much? Is Chiquitita.
Oh, it's one of the best songs in the thing, and it's not in the movie soundtrack.
It's one of, like, I think the funniest parts of the movie, because, like, Christine Baranski and Julie Walters, as they're delivering it, like, Julie Walters, like, knocking on the toilet door as Meryl Streep is crying inside, being like, Chiquitita, tell me what's wrong!
Oh, that was very good.
With her like...
It's so beautiful.
With her like her pharmacy glasses on the end of her nose and like her sort of resort wear. I find her so funny.
It's so beautiful.
Yes. Christine Baranski is ahead poking over the toilet and she just goes, I hate to see you like this. It's just these like I know the comedy is really broad, which it should be, because it's almost like the physical comedy in Mamma Mia, it almost feels like a silent film actor, like the way it's so big. But the little choices, especially by Julie Walters and Christine Baranski, make it so much more than the sum of its parts, if you know what I mean. Their little enunciations, their little deliveries.
100%. Yeah, that has the energy of like anticipation in Rocky Horror. You know what I mean? Like, they're making bold choices left, right, and center. You haven't seen Rocky Horror?
I tried to watch it when I was younger.
I thought we had something going here. It, like, is the definition of camp. Anyway, we're getting sidetracked. But it has that energy, like, bold musical theatre camp energy.
Yes, yes. Everything's so big. And them just, like, it's so silly. Like, every... The comedy in this is just so silly, and it hurts no one.
It hurts no one. You're so right. And, like, no, I mean, I'm trying to think about it. Nobody is really the butt end of the joke. Like, they're not sending anyone up, really, are they?
I don't think so. Everything is just so slapstick. And, like, I remember a lot of people talk about the scene with Dominic Cooper and Amanda Seyfried when they're doing...
Lay All Your Love on Me?
Yes, exactly. And they're having their passionate thing, and they're, like, in the... It's very From Here to Eternity, rolling around in the sand. And then just all the guys come out of the water, and then the guys just, like, show up every now and then with their little weird flipper dance on the pier, and it's like yes. It's very much you either get it or you don't. It's either hilarious to you or it isn't. Like,
yeah, you get, I feel like that's a choice though, you know what I mean? I feel like you make the choice to get on board with Mamma Mia, or you can make a choice to hate it. I personally don't see the choice in it, because what is to hate? But I feel like you do really at that point have to lean in, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I almost think they should have those moments sooner in the film so they can be like, look, everyone, you have to be this tall to ride. Like, you have to be willing to get on board with this level of slapstick, strange fantasy, nonsensical men in flippers jumping off a pier.
Greek people everywhere, but very silent. Absolutely.
Very silent.
Absolutely. Very silent.
But it does make me think that, like, and I think most of the men I know, most of the straight men I know hate this movie. And it does, and they don't find it funny, they just find it embarrassing. And it's this thing of, like, I do think a lot of, like, that male-centric comedy and that stuff that we've been told is funny, and that, so, like, you know, lots of people are like, maybe it wasn't so funny, maybe it was just this weird aggressive endurance test. Like, I feel like lots of men I know see comedy as being a weird endurance test of, like, who can stand the most sort of, like a, you know those guys who are obsessed with calling everyone a pedo.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at Moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
No.
Yeah, I know the ones.
It's such an energy, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's also like men are like thrilled with something like The Hangover. You know what I mean? Like the Hangover yes. movies. And this is just like, I feel like it's in the same way that men don't see the humor in Bridesmaids. You know what I mean? Which is absolutely the funniest movie of all time. Like, I feel like yeah, you're right. It's like an aggressive sense of humor that this lacks, because it's camp and gentle and sends nobody up and mocks nobody, and that's kind of frowned upon by men. Like, it's not comedy unless somebody's the butt of the joke or you're taking the piss out of somebody, you know?
I also want to shout out to Meryl Streep's DIY acting, because that is toot toot, the camp train is here. Like, her with the drill and her with her little polyfiller gun is the most, it's the least Meryl Streep has ever tried.
Literally. And it's also the most endearing thing I have ever seen. It's so, when she's trying to fill the crack in the ground, like, bless. That bless whole, Meryl, you gave up.
Oh my god,
up.
There's a bit that I love where she's trying to fill the crack in the ground and the nozzle comes off the glue gun and she's just like, oh, for fuck's sake. It doesn't feel like Donna's choice. It feels like Meryl, like, being over it.
Fully, I buy it. I feel like there's, you know how Meryl Streep, like, really disappears into her characters. I don't know Meryl personally. I'm not going to pretend to know Meryl personally.
I mean, you know Nicole Kidman personally, and that's like...
I do know Nicole Kidman personally.
It is!
It's a step closer, you know what I mean? But I do feel like... maybe I just want to believe this, but I feel like there's a lot of Donna in Meryl,
and
there's a lot of Meryl in Donna. Like, I feel like it wasn't such a big gap to bridge.
Yeah, I believe it. I believe that there is, like a gentle silliness to Meryl in her... And I don't know where I'm getting that from.
I think it's okay that we really want to believe that. You know what I mean? It's okay if it's not the truth, but I'm happy that that's my lasting impression of Meryl Streep. You know, she will die as Donna to me.
When I was a teenager, I used to own this book called The Celebrity Yearbook, where it was like all the most famous people in the world, what their yearbook photo was and what their yearbook quote was. It was a very cool little book. And Meryl Streep was in it. And Meryl Streep's, I can't remember what her quote was, but next to the picture, it was like, president of the French club, president of the cheerleading society. Basically, she was president of like every club, and she was valedictorian of her high school. And I think that Meryl's whole vibe as a person is that she was like an overachiever at a young life, at a young stage. And then I think in her middle age kind of mellowed out. And now she's like, I want to have like fun and not take things too seriously and be a little bit like dirty and just silly, you know?
A little bit balls to the wall. Yeah, I feel you. Because she's really, there's like a looseness to her, you know what I mean? Like, even in her physicality, like, I feel like she plays fast and loose, you know what I mean? And that's what makes her kind of hot as well. Like, she's got mad MILF energy in Mamma Mia.
Here's something I want to ask you as an actor. Every time I see an actor having a good time on screen, because I'm a simple toddler, I want to believe that somebody who's being that free and that expressive and that smiley and that giggly on screen is also having a nice time doing it. Speaking for all Greek people and all actors, can you tell me whether or not that is true?
Listen, speaking on behalf of Greece and actors globally, it really depends on who you're working with. You know what I mean? Like, there are actors that I cannot look at, like, when I work with them without laughing. And, like, any joy present is absolutely real. There are also actors where I have to pump my laughing bone like I'm losing a lung. Do you know what I mean? Like, but you know that kind of fake laughter that actually physically hurts your lungs?
That RuPaul does?
Yeah, that RuPaul does, that kind of laugh that, like, you're not even, you're giving up halfway through the laugh. Like, that's also a vibe, you know what I mean? It's very much who's sitting across from you.
There's this, like, quietly radical thing going through Mamma Mia that is so low down in the mix. But there's basically this bit where Donna finds out that the three guys have shown up and to basically claim Sophie as their own and, you know, walk her down the aisle. And she's been like, she was said something like, you know, I've been here all this time for 20 years. Like, and like, I don't want some man showing up and taking all the credit over an ejaculation. And she sounds like she's being really petty when she says it. But when you actually think about it, like, weddings sideline motherhood in a really major way.
That is so true, hey. That is so true that, like, one of these guys who has been out of the picture gets to rock up and take all of the credit for her hard work. And that's actually acknowledged in the film and respected, right?
Yeah. Yeah, this whole thing of, like, oh, you know, Sophie wants someone to give her away. She wants to have this big white wedding. She, like, longs for this sort of, like, patriarchal structure. And then, like... The character arc for Sophie isn't finding out who her father is. It's finding out that these patriarchal structures are damaging and don't matter.
Which is amazing. You know what I mean? Like, this is why, again, it gets my goat that people dumb this movie down and think it's silly. Because, like, what, 2008 for, like, a really mainstream movie. And also, like, that video set, like, it was, like, one of the highest grossing films, wasn't it? Like, a...
Yeah, 64 million in its first year. Crazy. UK alone, yeah.
And for something that, of that, with that much span, to have, like, really subtle but present feminist messages is pretty massive.
Yeah, it shouldn't be as revolutionary as it is, but it is. Like, these things should be commonplace or whatever. And like, we're going to quote that video again, and I will share it on social media, but there's something that Lena Norm says, which is, you know, it's a movie that rejects patriarchal structures, but it still loves men.
Mm.
Like, it cares about all three of those guys. It cares about the Swedish guy somewhat less, but but it's such an affectionate movie, and like, yeah, she wants them all to be her dad. It's not about telling any of them to, like, you know, take a running leap or whatever. It's about this really, like, this very, like, found family trope thing going on of, like, oh, we don't need this nuclear family. We can just be this extended thing of people who eat lunch outside, you know?
And also, like, they are three very gentle men. Like, yeah. They're three soft, beautiful, nuanced men. There's kind of nothing, I mean, besides Bugalugs, you know, who sails the boat. Like, there's nothing hyper-masculine or, like, traditionally sexy about any of them.
I want us to talk about, if it's not too emotionally trying, slipping through my fingers. Are you there? Did you go offline?
I just went really quiet.
it makes me cry so much. I just, like, there are so many movies about brides, and the bulk of female stories in rom-coms are about weddings and brides and who gets to get married. But I've just never seen anything in a movie that's about the pain of loving a child and the pain of letting your child go. And
That's it, isn't it? It's the pain of loving your child, and also the pain of loving your mum, and the pain of farewelling whatever time that is. What's that line in the song? The one that breaks my heart the most is the places I'd planned for us to go. Some of that we did, but most we didn't, and why, I just don't know. I'm like, yeah. Oh, fuck! Like, you know that shit you just always think you're gonna do with your mum? And you just keep putting it off and putting it off. And then suddenly you're like, you know, I don't know, 30, 40. And that window's gone. Like, that terrifies me. And that ache, like the physical ache, I think anyone who has a great mum feels in their body when they listen to that song, is so universal. And they capture it so perfectly.
It's so perfect. And the line that always gets me, the moment I start crying is when, you know, it's like, first of all, it's like school bag in hand, and I'm like there. I'm like, ah! but the bit where, like, the tears, like, tip out of my eyes and onto my face are when, like, Meryl is just like, and then I have to sit down for a while. Like, she's just so overwhelmed by her own emotion. Yeah. And then the bit where I fucking, like, it's like a proper primal scream. It's when she's like, when the feeling that I'm losing her forever without ever entering her world.
Ow. It aches, man. It, like, burns. That song burns. Also, that power fucking duet they have. Like, when they both sing at the same time, that harmony they make, the agony in their voices, like, that yearning you have for your mum. You know what I mean? Because it's also a time when Sophie just feels like a little kid, you know what I mean? You know when you, like, even something big happens in your life and you just want your mum to tuck you in?
Yeah.
Like, I feel like that's what that speaks to. Oh, don't, you're going to make me cry. It hurts so much.
Yeah, like, the bit where, yeah, when she's just, her mum is just babying her, and they've had this, like, this is after they've had this fight about where, like, it's so good because, like, Sophie says this line, which you can tell, like, the character doesn't mean, where she says like, oh, you know, like growing up without a father, it's crap. And you can tell it's such a good acting choice by Amanda Seyfried, because you can tell that it's a thing that the character means in the moment because she's feeling sort of bratty, but it's not something she's really felt her whole life, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. It's like ammunition.
Yeah, yeah. It's like on the tip of her tongue to say in a fight, but we truly know, we're very comfortable as the audience in that, like, Sophie's had a lovely life. She's had a lovely time.
Yeah. On a fucking Greek island with Meryl Streep. Thank you very much.
Excuse me. I was watching the video of this over and over again last night. And I was looking at the comments and they were just absolutely wrecking me. There's like all these YouTube comments about people who had like difficult relationships with their mother or their mother was dead. And they were looking, they watched this to feel close to her or whatever. And then there was this one comment with like, you know, 65,000 likes. And it was like, I really hear all these comments about your moms, but imagine what it was like for Amanda Seyfried sitting in Meryl Streep's lap having her paint her toenails.
That is so true.
What a bonkers day of shooting for Amanda.
What a day. That's one you don't forget. That's one for the memoirs, Amanda Seyfried.
Yeah. Just like a really new actress just being like, yeah, I guess I'm going to sit in Meryl Streep's lap and have her with like toe separators on. It's mad.
I guess she'll put my Band-Aid on for me.
Oh my God, the Band-Aid scene. Because the whole scene of like, so she's like lying down with the toothbrush in her mouth and she's like submitting to being cared for by her mom, but you can tell they both really like it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh jeez. It's just like, I've never looked at that scene and not immediately called my mom.
It's one of those, hey, it is one of those.
You said that your mom cries at The Winner Takes It All, but do you cry at The Winner Takes It All?
I do on behalf of her now. I just think my mom's a real sucker for like anything with Greek level stakes. You know what I mean? Mm. With like Greek tragedy level stakes, like anything kind of epic, like in the true sense of the word, like it's going to get my mom's goat. And so I think I have inherited that from her. And there's something about like the sheer enormity of Meryl Streep in that moment. Like I'm talking like camp, drama, emotion, truth, like the fucking lights, the hill, the spinning, the wind, something about it. I'm like, oh, and my face is wet. You know what I mean? And I can't pinpoint it. It's just the size of it, you know? It's moving. Like, it's a genuinely moving thing.
It's... If you haven't been watching the movie up until that point and you just came in for that scene, it seems quite bonkers because, like, she's... Like, the framing is really weird. Like, why is this woman, like, throwing a scarf at Pierce Brosnan? And, like, why are they so small in the frame? And, like, it's all the mountains and the sea is around. You're like, what is this? What are the steps? And also, like, I'm not even that sure when I'm watching it what she's singing about. Like, I think part of it is, like, you know, you can't come here and that thing we talked about, you can't come here and claim my daughter after years of not being in the picture and after leaving me to get married and blah, blah, blah. And, like, that's part of it, but it's not all of it. It's kind of about Pierce, but it's kind of just about something that character has been storing up for 20 years.
That we're not privy to. It's almost like, I would say, the song that fits in the movie the least, but still the song that fits in the movie the most. Like, in terms of plot, I'm like, this bears virtually no relevance to anything in the story. However, it works. Can we also talk about Does Your Mother Know?
Oh, yeah, we skipped right past it.
Okay, I want to bring it up because that song is my gender and that song is also my sexuality.
Please go on.
Listen, in terms of elaborating, I'm not sure if I can, Caroline, just that there is something about the glamour, the class that Christine Baranski has, you know what I mean? Mm. Like, the status, like, I'm like, I want to fuck you, but I also want to be you. And then that young fella, I want to fuck you, but I also want to be you. Like, it's like power play hot. They're both like really sexual opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of gender, They're both sexualizing the shit out of each other in a way that's so horny. I just, like, I watched that, like, you know the way a lot of people talk about a lot of people, my friends, who also love Mamma Mia, talk about Lay All Your Love on Me as, like, bisexual awakening song. You know what I mean? Like, bisexuals love that scene because they're both so hot. That's how I feel about Does Your Mother Know? Like, that's the one when I feel, like, a bit like I want to walk down the street and feel hot as shit. I'm going to listen to that song.
Yes. Yeah. No,
it's an odd choice, and it's maybe one of the more unrelatable things I've said in this conversation.
No, it's so weird that you say that, because I do get it. There's something about her in that scene where it feels like this kind of, this femininity that she's grabbed with both hands, you know? And... And then his character, there's something really femme about him.
Right?
Like, his voice is really soft. Like, his eyes are so soft. His hair is more natural, but it feels very femme. Like...
Yeah. It's like a bit of a lesbian anthem. Gonna go... I'm gonna call... You know what I'm gonna call it? It's a lesbian anthem.
It's a lesbian anthem.
I think it is. I think it's like... Yeah, I think they both have the energy of, like, it's got queer energy, that song, to begin with. Mm. Don't know why.
I mean, does your mother know that you're out?
Yeah, Come on. Like, it speaks for itself. And they both have very, like, they both kind of look like what it looks like when you turn the lights on at the end of, like, a Leso night at a gay bar. You know what I mean? Like, you could expect to see both those people fucking in the corner.
Yes. So beautifully put. Yeah, they're just two lesbians. Of course, it all makes sense now. It all makes sense. And everyone's so happy they're finally together. Everyone's just gathering around them being like, yay!
Exactly.
There's one thing I want to say. It may be controversial, but when we were watching it yesterday, it came up a lot. We thought that Amanda Seyfried and Dominic Cooper feel like two people who met in rehab. Do you get it?
Yeah, I really do.
They never have chilled out conversations. They're always talking to each other about, like, what they want from life.
Yeah.
It's very...
It's so true. It's like, it feels like they're both on the 12 steps.
It doesn't it? Like...
Yeah, big time.
I'm so glad, and I hope...
And they're also both sober and bored and... Because they can't drink, need to plan their futures together.
I'm so glad you see, and I say this with every respect for people who are in 12 steps. I have lots of people in my life who are in it.
Absolutely.
But unmistakably, there is an energy when somebody is sort of like halfway through that and like has been out of rehab or whatever, of like trying really hard to, you know, fit into sort of like functional society, sober society, and almost overcorrecting. To the point of wild-eyed mania, you know?
Yes. Yeah, it's like the grace period, like when you're re-entering the world.
Yeah. I've so many people in my life who've like, who I love dearly, but like have been on that journey, and now they've been through it, and they've kind of reached this moderation where they're just kind of able to take life as it comes. But there's always this period where they're like, "Yeah, I met this great girl, and we're gonna get married, and I'm gonna work on the hotel."
Like a real earnestness.
Yeah, a beautiful earnestness, but doesn't make me convinced about the longevity of those two's relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. But I also couldn't give a fuck about the longevity of their relationship.
Yeah. No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, stay together or not, I really don't care.
So, okay, here's something that we're going to get to. When we first started setting this interview up, you said, you know, the second movie is bullshit. And I was like, I've never seen it, even though I love Mamma Mia and I adore Cher, and I haven't seen it. And we both agreed it's because the second movie, it knows too much.
It really does. It knows what it is. And like you said, this is what you said in your message to me. Once the movie is in on the joke ain't funny.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing. Because when they did this first movie, they meant it.
They meant it so hard. And they meant it with such sincerity. But once the movie's like, ha-ha, we get it now. We know we're a little camp. We know we're fruity. We know we're quirky.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. Yeah. You broke it. You broke Mamma Mia. Congratulations.
I really do agree with you, because I do think that, like, yeah, when you've had this thing that was like a big deal on the stage, and then it was made in this really unusual way with this really strange cast of characters for the movies, and then it was, even though it was obviously highly funded and big stars, it was a real runaway hit and this formula that no one could have seen working. And then to repeat the formula for like, knowing you're going to have the mainstream already, the sparkle is gone, the wink is gone, it's just a sausage factory now, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, they butchered it.
Let's finish it off with talking about, I think, my other favorite song in the movie after Slipping Through My Fingers, which is When All Is Said and Done. Do you feel strongly about this? Because I feel very strongly about it.
Yeah, please talk.
So, like, Slipping Through My Fingers makes me want to call my mom, and When All Is Said and Done makes me want to call my dad. Like, because there's something about that sort of, like, that sort of beautiful sit, because, like, obviously the ending is that, like, Sophie doesn't get married, but Pierce and Meryl do, not even bothering with their character names anymore. And then, like, instead of having this, like, rushed young people's, you know, just out of NA wedding, they had this sort of, like, really mature kind of love. And it's like this lovely sit down dinner. And, like, he just looks at her and he, like, he touches her face, and it's like, and he's, you know, here's to us one more time, and all that kind of stuff.
Hey, voice again, yeah.
Come through, voice. and the way, and it's because Pierce Brosnan, like, his voice has, I think, has a lot of character and a lot of warmth, but it's not technically great. It's like he sounds like my dad when my dad gets up to sing at a wedding or any kind of family event. It feels like the way men sing at things.
Yeah, and there is something, you're right, there is something, like, I mean, there's something daddy about Pierce Brosnan, but there's also something really dad about Pierce Brosnan, like that kind of, he's like, you know, if you've got like a good, gentle dad, you can just see him like getting choked up at a wedding, yeah. Or like, there's a real, yeah, there's a, I know what you mean, like, I've never thought to long for my dad in that song, perhaps I will now, having heard your piece, but you're so right.
It's and there's just something about that, and the sort of the maturity of the whole thing, and this idea of, like, I don't know, I think this time it hit me more because, you know, this has been obligatory pandemic reference, but, like, it's been a long couple of years, and, like, when I went into this pandemic I was 29 and now I'm 31, and so, like, I've had a non-insignificant freak out about, like, getting older and losing youth, and to end the film on this, like, beautiful, like, song about the maturity of love and the maturity of life and how not being too old for things, I find it really beautiful.
Yeah, and also it gives them so much dignity, like, that's what I think I really love about the movie, is it really, that's the word, right, dignifies all the older characters. And it takes the piss out of them, sure. But, like, it's not, I think so often we're sold that narrative of, like, if it ain't young and hot and steamy and, like, full of passion and hormones and, you know, it ain't real. And so rarely we're sold this story, you know what I mean? Which is something that is gentle and mature, like you said, and, like, really kind of compassionate and unhot, like, as in unheated and unsteamy.
It's so nice. Zoe, it's just so nice.
It's so nice.
So, Zoe, there's a very special reason that you're on the podcast today, which is that you're promoting 9 Perfect Strangers, where you play Glory. Can you tell us a little bit more about it?
About 9 Perfect Strangers in general?
Yeah, I mean, like, 9 Perfect Strangers, I read the book a few years ago. It's about nine strangers, I believe, who go to a sort of a wellness center and are kind of taken in by a very charismatic Nicole Kidman, sort of cult leader, and then all is not as it seems. Tell me a bit more about your role.
I mean, listen, my role in it is ever so small. I'm dosing everybody and doing what Nicole Kidman tells me to do. But yeah, I think, I don't know, it was so interesting shooting the show because have you seen Big Little Lies?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Big Little Lies is really sure of what it is, you know what I mean? Like it really knows what kind of genre it is, I suppose, and what world, like the rules of that world are very clear. Whereas I feel like why No Perfect Strangers is different is because the rules of the world are a little murkier and the genre that it sits in, it's kind of a little bit of everything. And when we were shooting and I was like, this is either going to be fucking spectacular or a train wreck, and I cannot tell. And watching it back, I think it's been really, really rad to see, like, the... I don't know, because you've got these masters of their craft. Like, they're so talented, the people in that show. And they're actors who can really handle comedy and they're actors who can really handle tragedy. And I think it's such a gift to get to watch, you know, people like Melissa and Nicole and Bobby and Michael and Regina get to handle tragedy and comedy in the same breath, you know, in the same scene. And so I think it's really paid off in that regard. I think it's pretty fucking rad.
It's incredible. And it's so inspiring because like when I was, you know, researching you and looking at little interviews that you've done over the years, you did this fabulous interview on YouTube a little while ago saying that, you know, you felt like a real political onus to come out as queer and to come out as non-binary and how you knew that that would have an effect on the roles you were going to get. And then to just see you swing around and get this huge prime show with some of the biggest talents in the world. Like, I just can't imagine how that must factor into your like whole consciousness.
Yeah, it was pretty, I feel very like, very fucking lucky, you know what I mean? Like, I'm very grateful to... Because I know that the experience of most trans actors is not that, you know what I mean? And I also, like, acknowledge the privilege I have in I'm a lucky trans person because I can pass as female and I can pass as male, which means I'm open up to all the roles instead of, you know, like, a very small...
Just taking everybody's roles.
Yeah. But I feel very... Yeah, I mean, it was like, it was fucking bullshit. It was ridiculous rocking up to work and seeing those people. I was like, how did this happen? Who let me in here?
I'm just so thrilled for you. It like couldn't happen to a nicer person, honestly. I'm just...
Oh, thank you. That's so nice.
And I really hope it's the beginning of loads of nice things. I have to ask you, because we're big Nicole Kidman fans of the podcast and we have a Moulin Rouge podcast coming out very soon. Just give me one juicy tidbit about Nicole. It can be a really mild one. Like she only drinks sparkling water or something.
Okay. You know how people say about her, I don't know if this has made it to where you are in the world, but like here people often say it really does look like she has a lamp on inside her face. Like she glows.
Oh, wow.
She's like effervescent. Like it's literally looked like somebody turned the Christmas lights on in her body. I don't know what she puts in her skin, but she literally, it's like there's a sun stuck in her.
It's so funny with people who've been famous for a long time. They just have this otherworldly presence. Like they're from this fairy kingdom. Isn't it really weird? Like it's destabilizing.
They're so shiny. It is destabilizing. I feel like a shrub. I feel like a pot plant around them. Like I'm like, you are so, why do you sparkle and I have pimples? You know what I mean?
Oh.
Like it's just bullshit.
It's just very exciting. And is there anything else that's coming out that we should look for you in?
I don't know. Yeah, I'm Wentworth. That's a big show where you guys are. I think people love Wentworth in the UK. Yeah, that's about it. Yeah, I think I'm heading over your way next year for something I'm not allowed to talk about yet.
In London?
Yeah, I'll catch your face then.
Oh, shit, can we meet up?
Yes, please. That would be so nice. That would be delightful. I'm going to rub it in my friends' faces so hard.
This has been Sentimental Garbage, and I've been Caroline O'Donoghue. You can follow me on Twitter at Zaroline, that's C-Z-A-R-O-L-I-N-E, or email me about the podcast at sentimentalpod@gmail.com. This has been a Justice for Dumb Women podcast. Thank you to Harry Harris for the jingle, Gavin Day for the artwork, and Hannah Varrow for the mixing.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.